Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S., a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brock and attorney at law Alan Phillips. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts and questions. Let's go!
I'm Debbie Brock, founder of Homeopathy World Community, speaking with our regular co-host, Alan Phillips, attorney at law from North Carolina. And we also have our special once-a-month visitor, Greg Glazer, constitutional lawyer from Copperopolis, California. He's the founder of Civil Action Network, an independent media organization offering coordinated citizens' referenda to promote justice, liberty, and sustainable living. You can visit his website at www.civilactionnetwork.org. And Alan Phillips is one of the nation's leading vaccine rights attorney. He advises individuals, families, attorneys, groups, organizations throughout the United States on vaccine exemption and waiver rights, supporting legislative initiatives aimed at expanding vaccine freedom of choice, and published internationally on vaccine health and legal matters. You can find him wherever there are issues of vaccination rights. And we're so pleased to have both of you today. I know we're going to give a little, you can also find Alan at pandemicresponseproject.com. And we're going to do a little heads up about news, and then we're going to get into the topic at hand, which is to have your right for vaccine freedom, even during times of martial law. So welcome.
Welcome, Debbie, and welcome, Greg.
Nice to be here today.
Glad you could tune in. I know this is a busy time of year for everyone.
Debbie, I want to waste very little time, if any, before getting to Greg, because we always Greg has just comes in rich with information every time we have him here, and I always wish we had 3 hours to go over. We never cover everything that he comes in prepared to talk about, I feel sure. But I wanted to take just a minute or two, and Greg, if you'll allow me just a brief moment before we have you dive in with us today. There have just been so many news articles on the vaccine-related issues, and I just wanted to read a few of the headlines. I don't even want to take time to discuss them today because we have Greg Glazer with us today, and we'll get into, I'm sure, some of these next week. But just to give folks a sense of what's been going on in the news recently, some of what's been going on with vaccines. And these are headlines from articles that are linked at the Pandemic Response Project website. That's these words all spelled out, Pandemic Response Project, and all run together, .com, pandemicresponseproject.com, and then there's a news page on that website. So, for example, there is an article from Massachusetts recently where a Massachusetts city announces, turn in your guns, get a free flu shot. Boy, that's a loaded one right there, isn't it? There have been several articles from around the country talking about the resistance on the part of healthcare workers to mandatory flu policies that are being implemented all over the country, as we keep talking about in probably weekly on this show in recent weeks. But here's an article, UMass Memorial Nurses Take a Shot at Mask Rule for Those Refusing Flu Vaccine. One of the things that hospitals around the country are doing where they allow exemptions is require those who either refuse or that they allow an exemption from the mandatory policy or in some cases state law requiring flu shots, they'll impose mask policies, sometimes rather coercively and punitively. Here's another article. At least $5.7 billion was given to vaccine manufacturers in 2011 by the U.S. government. It's such a racket. The government subsidizes vaccine research. It purchases vaccines. It has put in laws making it impossible, all but impossible, to sue the vaccine manufacturers directly for any of the death and disability caused by their products. It is such an incredible racket. Now we have some information here. Recent evidence shows vaccinated kids account for 90% of the cases of whooping cough. The knee-jerk reaction when there's an outbreak is, oh, vaccinate everybody. And we're seeing more and more evidence suggesting, well, maybe that's actually what's causing or at least making children vulnerable to rather than preventing whooping cough. Another article, very recent one, mumps outbreak involved 97% vaccinated children. Again, we're seeing a similar thing with the, both pertussis and the mumps. Another article, evidence.
I think we need to vaccinate some more.
We're just not doing it enough, are we? See, that's the problem.
It's not working. We do need to do more.
If we would just do more, the whole thing would go away, and I could go play music for a living. That would be it, wouldn't it? I'm going to just mention one or two more here briefly because there's just so much going on. And folks, I'm not going to read every recent article, the headline that I've got posted here, but I did just want to give listeners a sense of what's going on in the news and invite them to follow up and read any of these articles that are of interest. Here's one. Evidence of government cover-up regarding vaccines and autism. This particular article, one of many on the topic, because there was recently congressional hearings about the government's failure to address the autism epidemic. And, of course, those of us in the alternative vaccine community know that the reason that the government has avoided and evaded this issue for many years is because if they really took an honest, objective look at it, vaccines are going to come out looking really bad. And I've seen articles both ways on this, articles saying, finally, there's been, you know, some information put out to Congress and some interest expressed in the what anyone who looks objectively at the evidence, in my opinion, necessarily has to come away with, and that is the conclusion that there is a likely direct cause and likely cover-up, well, documented cover-up at this point in time. Serious problems there. But, of course, other people have come out saying how horrible that people have dared to suggest, you know, this connection and how it's going to interfere with this wonderful vaccine program. So we see the pro-vaccine and anti-vaccine responses. What we don't see, of course, is any mainstream media picking up on this milestone, frankly, in congressional history that there were hearings and they're talking about trying to open up that can of worms again and get some real serious and objective investigations into the autism issue, which would necessarily have to include information about the role of vaccines if it's going to be an investigation done with any integrity and objectivity. Well, that's just a quick sampling of some of the issues. This subject of vaccines continues to be a very hot and diverse one with multiple issues in multiple layers and levels and locations in our society. But with no more ado, and Greg, thank you for politely indulging me on that. Delighted, as always, of course, to have you here. And Greg, feel free to dive in and get us started because I'm sure you have plenty to talk about.
Yeah. And we have an interesting topic today. It's about the extent of emergency powers and the individual's right to refuse vaccination. And even to frame the question like that is a bit disingenuous because what refusing vaccination is it's being peacefully natural. It's staying peaceful, and it's being natural. You know, we're born that way. We're allowed to stay that way. It's obvious we have this right. There really has never been a question. It's just that we live in extraordinary times. And so in these extraordinary times of great technology, of not only great threats, but of also great fear, sometimes we can forget our roots, forget our fundamental rights. And so it's important for constitutional lawyers to – remind the public to stay calm and remember your intellectual foundation for your rights. So it is undisputed that you have the right to remain peacefully natural.
It sounds like Gandhi.
It sounds kind of nice, doesn't it? Yeah, it's a romantic vision of someone being peaceful and someone being natural and no one being able to come in and step on that. Yeah, it does sound very nice. And
we're calling you a romanticist, right?
Well, there's.
I remember when I learned about this in law school, and the way that we got there is very interesting. It's that the government does not have the power to create a law that someone cannot steer clear of. So that, what's another way to say it? It's that if there is no way, no possible way for a peaceful person, peaceful and natural person, to steer clear of a law to avoid its consequences, then that's a form of absolute power. And absolute power is not allowed in a republic. Every single power given to government has checks and balances on it. If you ever find yourself in a country or a place where that's not the case, I can assure you, you are not living in a republic. You are living it could either be a monarchy or some form of dictatorship. But yeah, in America, you have this right. So for example, the government can't make it a crime for you to have brown eyes, because having brown eyes is just a peaceful and natural condition of a human, and there's no way for a brown-eyed person to steer clear of that law, to avoid its consequences, even to make them wear sunglasses or to, you know, wear contacts is to require them to change to no longer be natural. And so because they can't steer clear of the law while remaining peacefully natural, it's a form of absolute power. And so on top of that, to even bolster that, the Supreme Court of the United States has found repeatedly that individuals have the right to bodily integrity and privacy, meaning that the individual cannot be subject to any forced medical treatment or forced intrusion. And whenever we find a case where the government is authorized to do some forced medical treatment, it is always because the individual at issue, the defendant, has done something which has necessitated it, such as he's a prisoner he's in a jail cell around other prisoners, so they had to treat him, or he's been admitted to a psychiatric institution, and the doctor has determined that it's in his best medical interest for him to be administered these psychiatric drugs. Now, right or wrong on what the proper treatment is for a psychiatric condition, the point to take away here is that there's always something that comes before this intrusion on your bodily integrity. Or let's take another example. So we hear it often said that if you want to be enrolled in a public school, that your kid, or if a child wants to be enrolled in public school, they have to either take a vaccination or have an exemption. Now, the reason why that is a requirement is because public school is a public benefit. You see, there's something that came before the intrusion to bodily integrity. Now, the intrusion is sticking a needle filled with poison into a child and calling it a vaccine. That's the intrusion into bodily integrity. What came before it, though, was the parent's decision to actively go to the government and say, give our child an education. Because once you do that, once you step into the arena of government regulation, you come within what the public health measures. Okay?
Let me jump in real quick here, though, because I believe that I certainly can't speak for all 50 states, but a public education here in North Carolina is a requirement unless you opt out of that requirement by homeschooling or private school or whatever. So you have choices. But you're required by law here your children are required by law to have an education up to at least a certain age or some other kind of hurdle, standard, threshold, or what have you. Does that kind of does that negate what you're saying in terms, I mean, it is definitely still a public benefit, I wouldn't argue that, but it seems to me it kind of throws a wrench in the works there. Could you address that, please?
Oh, yes, yes. So the first thing to do is to toss out all assumptions that the that you would even desire a public education or that you are entitled to it. Now, the Supreme Court has said that the right to public education is a fundamental right of every child. Now, and also a parental right, apparently. And so, but just because you have a fundamental right doesn't mean you have to exercise it. I have the right to habeas corpus, but how many habeas corpus petitions have I filed in my life? Zero. I have many rights that I choose not to use. And because I choose not to use them, I don't enter the arena of the regulation that governs the right. You see, although you have a right to public education, the public itself, the government, also has the responsibility to manage that right in the way that it deems fit. And one of the ways it's been able to, it manages that right, the right of, or the responsibility to provide public education, is in harmony or in congruence with its public health measures. And one of those public health measures is vaccination. So the takeaway point is to first abandon some assumptions, that the proper way to conduct your affairs is to seek a government benefit. It may be that you ultimately choose that road, but just abandon that assumption hypothetically for a moment. And then second, determine what is in your best interest to meet your ultimate goal. And if your ultimate goal, if you place the highest value on being natural and being peaceful, then the way to achieve that goal is not to take a government benefit or, for example, go work in a hospital. Because if you work in a hospital, then your hospital has the right, as the employer, to put on some burdens or embrace some public health measures. So there's a way to conduct your affairs in America to make sure that you retain this right, but you have to do it carefully. And the path to achieve that goal is getting narrower every year. And so it almost looks like it doesn't exist. In fact, you can read a lot of articles in the independent news that are that pretty much talk about this topic as if the right does not exist. But technically, legally, it does exist. It's just on a very narrow path.
It's a catch 22, if you ask me. They put you call it a narrow path. I say, if you do this, then you do that, or if you want this, then you must do that. It's almost like you don't have the freedom that you're talking about anymore.
Well, it's possible, and this is very fascinating. Topic here, Greg, and direction go with all this. I'm just intrigued by the conversation here. If I'm hearing you correctly, it sounds to me like the way to have the most control of your life is increasingly, if not always, to opt out of the system, so to speak, to get off grid, either to one degree or another, or perhaps even almost exclusively if possible. And for many people, That's very, very difficult. Just one quick example, as I have had the great pleasure and honor of working this fall with healthcare workers from over two dozen states around the country, and I hear over and over again everywhere, the people will come to me and say, Alan, how do I avoid this flu shot? And by the way, there's, five or whatever other people in my department who don't want the shot either, but they're afraid to even ask for an exemption. People feel like they don't have the ability to either risk losing their job or to unplug from the system. And I've heard from many of these clients, if I can just hang on one or two more years, I'm going to be out of there anyway, or I'm already looking for another job, but right now I have to keep this one, so how do I avoid the flu shot and so forth. And so I see people around the country, in hospitals in particular, just because that's been the majority of my client base this fall, struggling with this very issue. How do they unplug from the system so that they're no longer, trapped by this get a shot or lose your job problem in the first place? And am I understanding you correctly that what you're talking about that's getting narrower is the opportunity for unplugging from the system so that you can then remain peacefully natural, as you call it, without the being harassed or hassled by employers or others about getting vaccines or whatever else it might be.
Yeah, and it's hard. And the reason why I say it looks like the path is getting narrower every year is because of our assumptions. Our assumptions are that we have the right to, to drive a 3-ton automobile, which, travels at high speeds and is filled with flammable and pollution-based liquids, and that we have this right to do so unimpeded. There's a contingent out there in America that believes that. The Supreme Court
Can you repeat that? You're saying
when you phrase it that way, Greg, it becomes much easier to see that the assumption has some holes in it. But most of us aren't seeing it.
I mean, who is assuming that they can drive a 3-ton automobile traveling at a high speed filled with flammable liquids? No, I don't think that most people feel that way.
But that's an objective description of what a car is.
I agree. It used to be traditionally, though. This is kind of what I'm trying to talk about. I'm trying to talk about how the road was wider in the past. How there used to be a much greater leniency or freedom to drive an automobile without such things as a license, without such things as registration. But then the road narrowed over time, and it got to the point where the public had decided that that this particular activity, driving an automobile, which I call a 3-ton flammable pollution machine, is not a fundamental is not a right that you get to have without regulation.
One of the first things they said, and when I was in driver's ed, Greg, was driving is not a right; it's a privilege. They really underscored that, and we lose track of that because it's such a fundamental thing, part of our daily survival for the vast majority of us. But we lose sight of this idea that it's not just this kind of fundamental right that you automatically have unrestricted.
And so now let me get back to the point, and this is so important and interesting. It's really interesting. It's that the kernel, the core, the essence of the right never went away. It's just that your assumption, or not your assumption, I'm saying that the public's assumption about this right to travel, it changed so that the car itself lost the right, but the person still has the right. You still have the right to walk unimpeded. You don't need a license to walk or registration to walk, because if they made that, you would be impeded in your right to be peacefully natural. The right to be peacefully natural has always existed. It just is on a narrower road.
P.S. We have a lot of people in this country who drive without a license.
To anyone who might be listening who would fall within that category, I refer them to the case of Skirtle, Montana Supreme Court. It talks about how you need a license. You can't be a patriot free man and.
A lot of aliens who are in this country illegally, who are not able to get a license, they're in hiding. That's another topic.
in California, there's a rule that says that the police officers are not supposed to pull over a car and take someone away just for lack of a driver's license. That's kind of interesting.
Only in California.
But this idea of licensure, this idea of kind of getting off the grid. So let's redirect it back to our topic, which is emergency powers. Okay. So what we've been talking about now is times of peace. It's a lot easier to stay, to be peacefully natural and to have a sense of freedom in this world during times of peace. But when it comes to emergency powers, we look to history to see what has happened when martial law is declared, what rights go away or what changes. And historically, there really is no common theme. You can find threads where threads of similarities, but there's no hard and fast rule for what is a declared emergency, what rights go away, what stay, how long it lasts. It always depends on the circumstances. So, you know, we can look at, you know, a smallpox outbreak in one area, or we could look at, you know, a war. Like, for example, President Lincoln declared martial law throughout the entire United States during the Civil War, but the Supreme Court threw it out in a famous case. And they said that you can't do that. And the reason why is because martial law only exists because the courts don't work. If the courts work, it's not martial law. That's regular law. So essentially, the case came from Indiana, and it was a guy who he was a pacifist, and he didn't want to be drafted into the war. I think that's what it was. But he was in Indiana, and the courts were functioning fine. And he challenged this idea that he had to have a military tribunal. He said, "Well, I should have a tribunal. My hearing should be in the courts, in the official Indiana courts." And it went all the way up to the United States Supreme Court, and they said, "Of course, yeah, that's what martial law is." And Lincoln overstepped his boundaries. Now, by the time all that happened, you know, years had gone by, battles had been fought. I mean, that's what happens in the real world, is that these things they play out over time. And so what you find, let's take another example. Let's go back to New York, where you have a public health authority, the local health board of New York, which covers a massive area, millions of people. They declare an emergency and require vaccination for smallpox or for measles. And now, in this example, I forget which one it was, you had some people were literally running for the hills because they had that opportunity. You know, they had a retreat in upstate New York, and they would just go there and stay there until things died down, because public health authorities get so inundated with the daunting task of implementing their public health measures across the entire population, that realistically, they're not trying to, you know, ship everyone or vaccinate everyone. They're just trying to get a majority of the population, or, you know, 80% of the population. They're just trying to, you know, bring things back to a sense of normalcy, in a sense. And so if you see that example throughout history, and that is a thread you find, a similar thread you find throughout history, then you can sort of learn how to see things coming in America today and navigate them properly. And so I guess let me toss it back to you guys. What do you see coming in America today? Do you see any pandemic on the horizon?
It's an interesting point. I think I'm going to be slightly askew to your question, but I was thinking earlier that I wanted to put a question to you as I was listening to you describe all of this, Greg. And you're saying, you know, fundamentally a republic has certain characteristics. And I feel like, as a practical matter, we're losing our republic in a maybe less and less gradual way, but overall in recent years and decades has been, I think, gradual, although it feels like at an accelerated pace recently, that whereas I hear you and certainly take no exception to your assertions about, if for no other reason, because I know how brilliant and well-researched you are, but about the right to be peacefully natural, and you've added clarity on that again today. And yet, of course, as you well know, the legal analysis is often a starting place, which may or may not correlate to what goes on in the physical, real world, you know, factual world. And, you know, for example, we can talk about constitutional boundaries and that states cannot enact unconstitutional law, and yet we've discussed on this show in the past about how states have been doing that with, for example, implementing laws recently restricting access to vaccine exemptions. Five states have done that, and at least three of them, in my opinion, in violation of the First Amendment. This sort of thing continues to go forward. And I've seen hospitals around the country implementing exemption policies for their employees, that the vast majority of which violate federal law. One of my tasks this fall has been to educate hospitals about federal civil rights law and where they have to basically relax their initial exemption policies because they're unlawfully restrictive. So it's kind of like the extreme example I use when I talk to my clients, and forgive the tastelessness of it, but it's a really good way to make the point, and it is that a serial killer does not keep killing because they think it's lawful to do so. And the point there being that anybody can do anything they want to, whether it's complying with the law or not, ultimately, unless and until they're physically restrained. And so what we see going on in the real world, or what I see going on with my perception, is that a lot of this fundamental right to be peacefully natural, now we have sort of unwittingly, if I understand your discussion earlier today, as a society, we have sort of unwittingly stepped further and further away, perhaps, from the peacefully natural lifestyle of yesteryear into one where we now rely, most of us, in our daily life. For example, we couldn't function without a car, and so we sort of think of it as a fundamental right, but it really isn't a right. It really is a privilege, and in order to step outside of the restrictions that come along with that privilege, one would have to perhaps give up having a car, or at least give up having one they're going to drive on public roads. And so it's a trade-off. You know, we accept the advantages of having a car, but without perhaps realizing it, we're giving up some of our space, if you will, to be peacefully natural. On one level, we as a society, as we've become technologically, as we have progressed technologically, seems like that we have stepped further and further away from our peacefully natural roots, if you will, and the ability for us to fall back on that. But at the same time, I see these unlawful restrictions being aggressively pursued and implemented for purposes of our topic today, you know, vaccines in this show, just very aggressive, unlawful steps on multiple levels by the aggressive pro-vaccine agenda. Where does this leave us, and what can we do about all this? And feel free to treat those as rhetorical questions. But
I'll jump in on that. Well, what the public health authorities say today, according to the Congressional Research Service 2010 mandatory vaccination precedent current laws, they say that if you, during an emergency, if you resist a vaccination order, whether it comes from the federal government or the state government, if you resist that vaccination order, you can be quarantined. Okay? So that's not good. A quarantine is, you know, think concentration camp. Isolation, think prison cell. Okay? Those are and either of those are options for the state. So as a peacefully natural person, you want to avoid that. So the goal, look at this historically, is try to conduct your affairs in a way that, number one, you don't have to interact with public health authorities who would, you know, try to test you or, you know, all that stuff. Try to just be peacefully natural. Have natural remedies around you, you know. Baking sodas, clays, good food, stuff like that, you know. If you are completely dependent on the system, I mean, come on. Obviously, the public health system is going to be there for you when you need it, you know. It's like, and that's when I get back to the assumptions. If you are completely dependent on the system, why would you expect to be treated in any other way and by the system that will, you know, implement its public health measures on you? But if you are outside of the system, you are less likely, I can't say you're categorically, you know, going to avoid it, but you are far less likely to be sort of churned into a camp, you know, or into, because again, I mean, I see the writing on the wall. I'm reading it right here from this published document. It says, if a person refuses to be vaccinated, he or she may be quarantined during the public health emergency, giving rise to the vaccination order. That is what your government thinks right now. And that's not going to change. And if it changes, we'll talk about it on the radio show.
Where are you reading from, Greg?
Yeah, that's from the document that I cited, Congressional Research Service 2010 Mandatory Vaccination Precedent and Current Laws from Kathleen Swendeman. So she takes the consensus of the nation and summarizes it. Or if you want, I can kind of confirm that. Like, I'll read to you from the Minnesota statutes. It says, this is from 2012, Minnesota. Now, Minnesota recognizes your right to be free from forced medical treatment. But they also say, so they're saying, notwithstanding any laws, rules, or orders promulgated in response to a national security emergency or peacetime emergency, individuals have a fundamental right to refuse medical treatment, testing, vaccination, et cetera, et cetera. But then it goes on to say that transferred agent refuses submit, and who refuses to submit to them may be ordered by the commissioner to be placed in isolation or quarantine. You see, so again, what the Congressional Research Service did is they looked at the statutes in the nation and said, you know, what's the theme here? What's our public health authority? What does the law say we are allowed to do as public health officers of the United States government or of the state of California or the state of North Carolina? What are we allowed to do? And what they found is we are not allowed to forcefully medicate anyone or forcefully vaccinate anyone. There is a right to be peacefully natural, but what we can do is we can put people in camps. And so that's the consensus, you know, of legal scholars today. And it is a sad consensus. We've seen it done throughout history. Look at World War II and the internment camps for the Japanese. Look at the outbreak in San Francisco. What was the Yik Wo case, Alan? It was forget what that was. It was maybe it was measles or something like that. Anyway, it was in San Francisco, and it was, you know, a large population of Chinese immigrants were put into camps, and their infectious diseases got worse because they were all congregated in poor living conditions. It was a terrible idea, and later on, a court overruled it, but it still happened. And now it's like history repeating itself over again, and that's what I'm trying to talk about today. The writing is on the wall. I literally just read it to you, and so let's get back to my question. What do you guys see on the horizon here? Well, this is what I see. I see camps for people. And I'm trying to tell people.
You need to sleep better at night, Greg. I mean, I would be very afraid to be in one of your dreams. That's kind of frightening, you know, picture. And I understand it. I especially understand it with the type of laws that are now being put into place. And it's not, I have one that's not vaccine related, but in North Carolina this year they passed a law that the ocean level will not rise. And so if you're talking about being peacefully natural, they threw nature out the window. We have actual data measurements showing that the sea level has risen so many inches, and they're saying, well, that's not possible. We just mandated it until 2015. It's not allowed. And these are the kinds of, I don't know who was behind the signature behind such a law, but the fact that people can mandate like God, nature, something is totally out of hand. And if you talk about mandating what other people in your community are allowed to do, that's, to me, totally irrational. And how can we stand for this?
Right. Yeah. So I think we're sort of on the same page on that. You know, G. Edward Griffin has written that the despots and authoritative figures will come and go, you know, and their reign lasts for a little while, but it's unsustainable and it fades, and then history repeats itself, and you get a new tyrannical government, and you know, there's always a certain part of the population that is able to escape their, you know, their death throes, you know, whether it's by guillotine or whatever. But today, it's just different, you know. The technology and centralization that we have today is really a game changer. Like, you know, you look at the quarantine measures that were implemented along the East Coast during the founding of our country and during like the latter part of the 19th century. And you know, one of the reasons that they were hindered in their enforcement is because, you know, you had public health officials, they were actually on horseback, stuff like that, you know. But today, there's more people, there's a great deal more people, and the people are angrier, and so that sort of offsets it. But yeah, you know, I see that there are executive orders in place, there are state statutes in place, and there are physical compounds, physical prison compounds in place to deal with this threat that is looming. And so if you know that, you know, you kind of want to try to conduct your affairs in a way that you will steer clear of this. And I don't mean to say that, you know, we should, you know, lie down and just accept what is, you know, being thrust upon society in this way. You know, I just think that there's sort of a, you know, greater reality to what is happening in our world. Like for example, the War of 1812. Okay, there you had the British came and they invaded, or actually the United States declared war on Britain because Britain was like supporting the Native American Indians, and there were, you know, ships fighting off the coast of Louisiana. Britain wanted the territory from the Louisiana Purchase, all this stuff. This is what the people were told, you know, and it was like, oh, okay, so this is our war, so now we're fighting the British again, and, you know, that's when we got the Star Spangled Banner song. You know, people were very excited about, you know, let's just conquer the British and all that. But you know what really ended the war in 1812? It was when when Bank of America renewed its charter with the Bank of England, which is a Rothschild-sponsored bank. Bam, war done. It's almost like all those other things, you know, they were just what was sold to the public, you know. And now we have this mass media campaign, and people are being sold on other things. And so what I'm trying to do is, with this radio show right now, today, in this moment here, let's talk about being peacefully natural, as if that was the real essence of it. So whether or not, you know, the current Federal Reserve Bank charter ends at some particular time, or whether or not, you know, there's an infectious disease outbreak of XYZ virus, you know, for you, for your life, for your family, you can just focus on that core, you know, and let the world's going to turn, you know, all around us. And we can certainly, you know, try to focus our research and change the world and all this stuff. But, you know, realistically, a lot of these calls, you know, a lot of these major world-driving forces they're so international in character and so beyond. They're like massive, like hurricanes that you can't even control, you know. And so on some level, you just kind of have to learn how to brace yourself for the coming storm. And that's what I think, you know, that there's a, you know, how it is a physical law that for every action there's an equal and opposite reaction. I feel that the action in America that massive action has already occurred, and for us to claim that we can stop the reaction with law or with, you know, some political activism or with our, you know, consumer power tomorrow would probably be wishful thinking. And that, but what we can do is we can change our individual lives. We can try to position ourselves toward finding that peacefully natural path. And it is, it has a legal foundation because the law, you know, protects your fundamental right to do that. You know, you may not have the right to travel in a car without a license, but you have the right to travel by foot without a license. You may not have the right to go into government service or be in a public school without taking a vaccine, but you have the right to be peacefully natural without that. And so when we find these things and we wait for this storm to pass, you know, if it does pass, or, you know, who knows what will happen in the future, I'm no prophet, but we can at least feel good about the choice you made. You know, looking back in history, looking at what legal options were presented to us, and think, you know, I made a smart risk, you know. I took a smart choice and tried to be peacefully natural. Another nice thing about being peacefully natural is that it tends to lead to the very thing that we want to create, which is a republic, which is this idea of personal rights. The more that we create a safe haven for ourselves, the stronger our communities get, and the less able this new world order is to present us with their campaigns of fear and viruses and outbreaks and all that stuff. So it's a smart risk is what I'm trying to say.
Greg, I wanted to chime in on just one point here, and I hope folks will forgive me for being a little bit oblique here. A former high-level government official in the federal government, and that's as far as I'm willing to go because it's not somebody I have permission to quote, recently made comment that we're dealing ultimately, and I it wasn't a comment about vaccines specifically, but I think it's one that applies to vaccines. I have sometimes, we'll talk about that there are layers behind layers behind layers and so forth, that ultimately we're dealing with people who operate outside of the law. And with regard to, and the so-called elite of our world today, probably people in the realm of international bankers, people who, you know, the world isn't controlled by the president or Congress or other people you see on TV. There are elite behind the scenes who operate in their own system, who have, you know, international, you know, the pharmaceutical international cartels, as they're sometimes referred to, and other industries and so forth, ultimately are controlled by a very small number of families around the world who, according to some people, and I suspect that this is ultimately true myself, for whatever that's worth, these are not forces that we're going to expose and reverse by some legislative activism, and I'm sorry to say that I agree with the kind of general premise you set forth. I would not say that there's not a positive difference that can be made on that arena. Quite the opposite. I think we need to be legislatively active, working to create the right and space and so forth to make informed choices with vaccines and other issues and so forth. But there are certainly some very powerful international forces who oppose that. And I do see us progressing in a very disturbing direction over time, consistently and methodically. And vaccines is just one arena in which a much larger agenda is playing out on the world today. But vaccines is a very good window into, I think, that larger room. You look at the multiple levels in which a very aggressive pro-vaccine agenda is playing out, and in the healthcare arena in particular, such a classic example of all the diseases that we have vaccines that supposedly prevent or protect us from. We're going to focus on the flu vaccine. I mean, really, the flu, and of all the diseases where there's information to show that the vaccines really aren't effective or they really are unsafe, the flu is the easiest one to do that. Even The Lancet published an article in recent months saying that the flu vaccine is only 60% effective. And that figure turned out to be a skewed misrepresentation of the data. But even if we take that at face value, 40% of people who get the flu shot, if they guess the strains correctly several months in advance, because the dominant strains vary from season to season, it's always a guess. And Dr. Sherry Tenpenny says on average they're about 60-70% you know, accurate in their guessing. So even if they guess the right strains, according to The Lancet, you know, 40% of people who get the shot are not protected. And yet they're forcing this on healthcare workers all over the country. And let me be clear about this. The Department of Health and Human Services Healthy People 2020 initiative has as one of its many agenda items to vaccinate all healthcare workers with the flu vaccine, but it has another separate agenda item of vaccinating all employees in the U.S. with the flu vaccine. What is it that's in these flu vaccines that somebody wants to make sure gets into the body of every person in this country? And I'm going to leave that question open, but there's no scientific basis for requiring flu vaccines. And so there's an agenda at work here that goes beyond the pharmaceutical industry itself and is just about profits. I mean, I think money and fear are the tools to implement that agenda. Hospitals are trying to maximize immunization rates of their workers because it's being tied to Medicaid and Medicare reimbursement, and it's being tied to hospital accreditation. But those people don't have an agenda to get something inside of the bodies of everybody in America. Well, who does, and what is it about? And it's not about, ultimately, I don't believe it's about the money. Certainly it's about the money to the hospital administrators at that level, but they're just the ones implementing this program. They're not the ones originating it. So what is going on here, and can we? How do we address it? I don't know if we can or not either, Greg.
Oh my God!
I mean,
sounds like a movie.
We can fight the fight at the the more localized level. You know, the hospitals around the country are violating federal civil rights law. We can challenge that, and I have been challenging that with my clients, and we're turning around hospital policy in hospitals around the country by doing that. But we're not affecting the larger agenda by doing that, and I don't know if we can. I don't know, Greg. You have any thoughts on that? And Debbie, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but I just felt.
You had a lot to say, and unbelievable. I mean, sure, whoever is listening, this is very stimulating discussion, controversial, upsetting the apple cart. I mean, there are things that you're implying that are quite frightening that don't really have anything to do with the law at all, as far as I'm concerned. And whenever I hear Greg, I hear you speak about being peacefully natural and the law, your romantic vision, the law will take care of you. Well, I also hear that the way that you're trying to do this is simply by avoidance mechanism. If I'm in the classroom, I'm a student, and I don't want to be called upon, I'm going to make myself look as small as possible. But you know, the teachers up front, they see you.
That's a scary analogy.
Well, I mean, it's true. I mean, this is what I hear is, if I'm a good girl and you're a good boy and we do what we're told and we stay out of the way, I'm afraid of dogs. So if I stay on the other side of the road, the dog isn't going to come running after me. So this is like the most avoidance that I can give myself. So I'm going to try and set myself up my own little garden, and I'm not going to I'm going to keep the baking soda in the closet. But what happens if I'm walking down the street, a car hits me, I have to go to the emergency room. Now I'm in the system, and there's no way out. Plus, I want to have emergency room doctors. I want to have people who are going to be able to help me in times of need. If everybody says, I got to be peacefully natural, I'm going to avoid becoming a doctor because I have to go into the system, I don't think that this is viable. There you go. I just said it.
Well, you raise a really good point. And this is, I think, one of Greg's main points here is that we're in a society where it's increasingly difficult to be outside of the system. Greg, give us your thoughts.
Yeah, I'd really like to chime in on that, because I'm not saying that it's this exclusive thing where everyone is supposed to be a daisy camping out in Yosemite. Our government is filled. I mean, we have, circular insulation, nuclear technology. If everyone just goes and lives in the forest right now, those things melt down. I mean, we need an efficient system. But what I'm saying is that as an individual, if you wish to avoid forced vaccination, that is a particularly helpful strategy. It doesn't and the more that you are self-sufficient and able to care for yourself, the more persuasive you are in the argument that we don't need oppressive public health measures. See?
And I do think, Greg, or Debbie, that Greg would not be suggesting something in sort of black and white terms here that here's the solution, just buy yourself a piece of land out in the middle of nowhere, build your little home, have your garden, and then just completely and totally disconnect and unplug from society, although that certainly is an appealing measure to me and others as we look at what's going on in the world today. I don't know that it's ever possible, of course, to completely unplug. There's no land you can buy anywhere that's not, let's say in the U.S., for example, that's not part of a state or territory or, subject in one manner, degree or another to regulation and control by local and non-local governments. You can't unplug absolutely and completely unless you've got inside connections with somebody who's got the technology to take you to a completely new planet and start over with a civilization or society. I'm sure those exist, but I'm not somebody with those kind of connections. So it's a question of degree, I think, that if you don't want to be – like in West Virginia, for example, my understanding is, they don't have any religious or philosophical exemptions to vaccines there for students, but – you have the right to homeschool. And there was even a case recently where the judge said the senior, high school senior who was homeschooled because the parents had religious objections to vaccines, there's no exemption, so she's homeschooled, but the school still has to provide her a public education. Isn't that an interesting ruling? And the article said that the case was being appealed, and so it'll be interesting to see, you know, how it ultimately plays out. You know, there's some right there because of some First Amendment right, even if it's not to have a public education without getting a vaccine for religious reasons, there still nonetheless was some federal law right there. But, you know, I think it's going to be a question of degrees and particular instances or styles of unplugging. Greg, is that, am I on target with that? Or?
Yeah. And another thing that I wanted to talk about was that we've been focusing on a lot of the theory and, you know, the purposes for stuff. But, you know, if we want to talk about the logistics and mechanics, we can absolutely do that. Like, you know, if you want to talk about the, you know, how do you file a writ for habeas corpus, or how do you defend against a commitment proceeding? You know, we can talk about the due process procedures and go into excruciating detail on, you know, like how much notice you have to provide before, you know, you submit one particular item of your paperwork. So there is a legal framework in place that is impressive for how well the American system operates to protect rights. And even when you have a
it sounds
a
like you really have do you really have trust and belief in the legal system of America? That's my question to you.
Well, let's take a historical example. In New York, remember that example I was giving where people were running for the hills? The wealthier individuals were able to hire attorneys to stave off the public health officials who were coming at them with their orders. And then, so the attorneys were actually standing up for the wealthy, while it was the poor individuals who were getting the brunt of the public health measures. So the attorneys were just able to stave off the intrusions for long enough that it ultimately didn't, you know, affect them. And so that's been, you know, one aspect of our society where you find that money can be a driving factor in the protection of right. And I don't, and so in one sense that is.
Does that answer my question?
Well
I think it's a piece of the answer.
Standing up and saying that, you know, these people are not going to be subjected to forced medical treatment or forced medical procedure.
The wealthy?
When a wealthy person files a lawsuit or submits their defense and it goes all the way up to the Supreme Court, that ruling doesn't just apply to the wealthy, it applies to everyone. And so we, you know, throughout the nation's history, it's been able to, you know, create a massive body of law to protect people, but you know, I don't have the ability, you know, we constitutional lawyers don't have the ability to sit down with a cup of coffee and talk to every public health official throughout the nation and convince them of the virtues of respecting, you know, of respecting privacy and individual rights. Even when you have scholars like George Annex, for example, or Wendy Mariner, who are champions of individual rights but still working within the system to do it, you know, they're like a minority voice, you know, against the backdrop of draconian measures, and the draconian measures follow the tide of society as well. You know, the people have elected presidents over the last, you know, century to build the very society that we are living in. So they've elected legislatures to build this very society. This is what people want. And so all these executive
What do people want? They want
the central government to have massive authority to take, and during emergency, they want the central government to have emergency powers to do things like take control of infrastructure and enact public health measures. Yeah, that's what the public generally wants. But they also, the people feel like they have this checks and balances power where the public health measures won't be an undue intrusion into their lives. And what we find, and this is one of the points I was raising earlier, is that, like with the Korematsu case of Japanese concentration camps, fear will guide the populace into doing actions that are ultimately deemed unconstitutional, but they still happened. That's how history repeats itself. You know, we legal scholars get to the issue, you know, years after it happens. So what I'm saying is, if you want to protect yourself, try to live in a peacefully natural manner. The law will step in, and if you're lucky enough to find, you know, an attorney like myself or like Alan or like Wendy Mariner, for example, who can step up and stand up for your rights, then you might be able to make a case. But, you know, there you might be one person among, you know, 5,000. The 5,000 get the shaft, but you were able to, you know, stand up your case so that maybe in the next decade after that, you know, you set a precedent. And we have so many precedents. We have so many mechanisms, so many legal mechanisms, but they're only as strong as the public willing to support them. If we had a benevolent leader, you know, who was able to take control of this, of all these emergency powers and guide the nation toward utopia and all that, you know, gosh, how nice would that be, right? But it's not the powers itself that are the problem. It's not the, you know, it's their misuse. It's like, it's not technology that's the problem. It's its misuse. It's not people that are the problem.
Let me speak to both of you with a couple of quick comments. First of all, Debbie, I will say that I have met some absolutely wonderful attorneys and judges in my legal career, but I have also seen serious problems in the legal system. I have seen people who do what they want to do, occasionally people who don't know what they're doing or appear not to know what they're doing and causing problems, and I've seen others, judges, for example, who I am clear know exactly what they're doing. It's wrong, and they do it anyway for whatever reason, political pressure, or they're just going to use their power the way they want to. It's sort of like they're going to do it because they can. So I do believe that the legal system in some regards, not in any absolute sense, of course, but in some respects and sometimes mirrors the larger level of dysfunction in our society as a whole. There is a corruption and dysfunction in the legal system as I've observed it, and clearly there is in the medical system and probably to one degree or another in all the systems in our society. In one sense, that's just a reflection of who we are as human beings at this time, unfortunate as it is. But I have also seen instances where those people who were, and I got to be careful how I phrase this because I don't mean any criticism of anybody. A lot of people just don't recognize when they're in a situation where legally they're over their head and they really should contact an attorney. So yeah. I've had a lot of healthcare workers emailing me back after I've worked for them with them this fall saying, thank you so much, I got the exemption. And one of the emails I got just yesterday or within the last day or two was one of those emails saying, thank you so much for your help, I got the exemption, and lots of people around me got fired because they wouldn't get the flu shot. The difference was the person who, whatever it was that alerted that person to the idea that this is a place where they were legally over their head and so they were going to look for help, and did, and this person found me and I was able to help her, you know, thank God. But other people, you know, we had an article recently about 150 people at one hospital system in Ohio were fired because they didn't want the flu shot. And I've had clients get back to me and say, you know, when other of my coworkers found out that I was able to not get the shot, they were like, oh, I didn't know there was any way out of this. And they felt horrible because they had gotten the shot that they didn't want to get, but they felt like they had to get. So, and I think when Greg was referring to the rich, I think what he really meant was people who can afford an attorney, people who can afford to mount a formal legal response. And increasingly in our world today, attorneys are more and more expensive, and most people are less and less able to afford one. And it's don't get me off, you know, on the faults and problems with capitalism, because I think the system basically has failed. But one of the what I cite as evidence, one of many pieces of evidence for that, is the fact that those things that are most critical to people's lives, which often is medical care and legal services, are the things that most people can least afford. And so, you know, there are some serious problems with the structure of our society one way or another when that, you know, is a prevalent condition. But there are both problems with the legal systems, but also advantages to those who are able to access it in a way that can work. So I think, Debbie, your concern about problems with the legal system are valid, certainly my experience. Greg, your concern about those who are able to work with knowledgeable and committed attorneys certainly have a good chance, at least, of achieving their goals.
And it's time to accept personal responsibility, too. You know, if I have a pipe that breaks on my ranch, you know, I can't always call a plumber. You know, if I have an electrical outage, so I need to know a little bit of how to be an electrician, you know. I've had to pick up these skills, you know. I have to learn how to farm as well. And I think that in our nanny state, it becomes too easy to say that we don't have to take personal responsibility for understanding our legal rights or knowing how to navigate a system. And
but it doesn't mean, let me clarify, it doesn't mean try to fix
look on the internet and find out how to remain, how to protect your rights to remain peacefully natural. It's so basic. It's just like I need to be able to figure out how I can provide water.
Say that again. You need to find out how to provide water?
Yeah, like I should, as a rancher, I should be able to figure out how to provide water. It's so basic. It's so fundamental. You know? I need to go out to the homestead to be able to provide water. And to the extent that I don't know that information, I should take personal responsibility for that and not blame society for not, you know.
If you don't have water on your land, how are you going to provide water? You bought a bill of goods if you bought it properly without water.
He didn't say he should go out and get water. He says he should take responsibility for figuring out how to solve that issue in his particular situation. And I just want to clarify, what Greg is not saying is you should get out there and fix that pipe yourself. What he's saying is you should take more responsibility for figuring out what's the best way to solve that problem. And it might include or might be, in any given instance, it might mean go reading a book about plumbing, figuring out how to do it, go buying the tools and equipment and do it. It might also mean educating yourself to a level where you recognize what your own limitations are. And there are going to be some times where, you know, you can't be totally self-reliant. You know, none of us, I think, is ultimately able to unplug absolutely from the rest of society. You know, you may grow your own food, you may have your own solar panels and do all your own electricity, but somebody had to manufacture that panel for you, and somebody made the clothes that you had to go buy, and it's just not feasible for anybody to go out and live in the woods totally 100% unplugged from the rest of the world. But it's going to be a question of degree. And if every time something happens, you assume that somebody else is going to come fix it for you, that's a very irresponsible position to take. So it's not necessarily, when Greg says take responsibility, I don't at least hear him saying do everything yourself. What I hear him saying is don't leave yourself at the mercy of everyone else and the system, because the extent to which you do that is the extent to which everyone else or the system can manipulate and control you in the way that those who run the system want to do that. And if you want to have the power over your own and control of your own life to as large a degree as is feasible, that's going to mean taking responsibility to the extent that you're able to with regard to all aspects of your life. And ultimately that's a case-by-case decision, a decision one may have and that evolves over time. You know, maybe for some people it does mean buy a piece of land, build your home, get the solar panels and the windmills or whatever. Maybe you do make a point of finding a place where you can dig a well so that you can have your own water, whether the power's on in town or not, you know, those kind of things. But it's not so much the solution, the specific solution, I think, that Greg is talking about is the more abstract principle of the way to be peacefully natural, if I'm hearing you correctly, Greg, is to take responsibility, which in large part is, I think, just an ongoing educational process, learning about the things that we typically and traditionally at this point in time in our culture, we just assume everybody else is going to take care of and fix for us. And necessarily that has to happen to one degree or another.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that you really stated it well. And the one sort of context point would be that we have to recognize the environment in which we live. You know, if you live in an apartment, if you live in Antarctica, if you live on the beach, you know, recognize your environment and act accordingly. And the environment, the legal environment that I wanted to talk about today is that it's that writing on the wall. It's that if you refuse vaccination during a public health emergency, you can be quarantined. So that's your environment. Watch out.
Well, we have gone over time here, Greg, but I just couldn't cut us off at the 1 hour mark because this was just too fascinating and too pertinent. Because as most people at this point in time know, regardless of their personal position on it, there are multiple sources predicting major events at this time in our civilization. And this has occurred, you know, in one degree or another, various other times in our society and civilization. But I think we are in unique times, as I believe you said earlier today, because for many, many reasons, and I won't try to list them all here, but the signs that are pointing to potentially problematic situations are of a greater order of magnitude and greater number and from times near and distant in our history and culture, nationally and internationally. If we're really, I mean, it's hard for me to believe that there's not some, at least potential validity to at least some of these predictions, and they come from in and out of scientific circles. I think these are unique times, and I think it is prudent for people to be thinking in terms of how dependent are we on the system, and do we want to remain dependent on that? What would it take to throw? It would take very little, I'll put it like this, very little to throw most people into total chaos in terms of their daily lives. Many people live paycheck to paycheck, for example. And if all of a sudden, you know, they lost their job and there was no unemployment or other backup measure that was functioning, most people would be in a very serious situation within a few days or a few weeks. If we lost infrastructure, if all of a sudden...
You don't have to make a theory about any of that, Alan. We just had Hurricane Sandy, and the people there are out of work. They don't have a home.
They're still struggling there, and after weeks.
Yeah.
And that's as tragic as that has been and continues to be, from the information I'm seeing anyway. It is still relatively isolated. We haven't had something that was society wide. And part of, you know, the predictions, the so-called 2012 syndrome or whatever you want to call it, which I don't personally see as being limited by any means to this 1 year in terms of potential issues. If we had something that was broader in scope, if there was a collapse of the financial system, which many people are predicting, if the trucks couldn't bring food to the grocery stores, how many people, you know, would be facing starvation within a few days or weeks? Very, very large numbers of us. So the idea of personal responsibility in some very practical ways, I think, is one that's an important one for us to be looking at, because there are many ways in which our current society is quite vulnerable and quite fragile. And the way it is structured today, most people are so interconnected with and so fully dependent on the system that any sort of fundamental system failure or breakdown would be catastrophic to large numbers of people. I guess that's my point. And I don't mean to be fear-mongering, but let's be practical and objective and look at the situation we find ourselves in today. You know, with vaccines, very aggressive agenda playing out on multiple levels, where more and more people are being required to get more and more vaccines under pressure, legally or otherwise, that they're finding very difficult to deal with, because they are tied into the system in a way that they can't just sort of quickly unplug. So there are some very serious questions here. You know, and Greg says be peacefully natural. That's the goal, folks. And one way to do that might be to work to get laws passed that allow us to make informed decisions, as instead of just sitting back and watching the laws that keep getting passed recently that make it even harder and harder for people to opt out of vaccines, for example. The agenda is rolling in a very disturbing direction, and one way to deal with that might be to be legislatively active. Another way to deal with that might be to look for ways to begin to unplug from the system so that you are less subject to its whimsical changes and manipulation and control. All very good and important concepts today, Greg, and I really appreciate you as always, your extensive research and insight into these issues.
Greg, do you want to respond?
Yeah, sure. If you can, you know, get off the grid and become an organic farmer and, you know, try to live off the land more, awesome. If you can't, and that's okay, you know, then just know that the law allows you to still remain peacefully natural. You can be peacefully natural in an apartment in New York. You know, that means that you are refusing vaccination. You have brown eyes. You know, that's peacefully natural. And so the law protects you. There are legal mechanisms that protect you as well. Try to remain peaceful. And there's a lot of strategies that you can do to cooperate with authorities and work with your doctor. You know, talk about these issues with your doctor if you have concerns about it, so that you can be prepared, so that if you ever get that knock on the door from a public health official, you know, you're not trying to resist the system or anything like that. You're just exercising your right in a rational, calm, and appropriate manner.
I think we should continue the next time we speak with you from that point. I would love to learn, what do you do? How do you work with the authorities? And how do you work with your doctor to be prepared? I think that would be a good thing to talk about.
Great. Yeah. I totally agree.
Okay. I know I kind of put you on the spot a lot today.
but with important questions and points.
Yeah, it felt like we had a little debate going there.
My point of view is, it seems like it's quite different. So I have a lot of questions about things and a lot of skepticism and trust in the law. I think that's what it is. I don't have you as a lawyer work with the system and feel that it works. I kind of don't. I think that's my...
Well, sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. And you know, it's certainly not 100% reliable, but that those are good points. But let's catch up next time and follow up on some of these points, Greg, if that works for you, because there's certainly... We have opened up a lot of questions and concerns here. Lots of room for follow-up and clarity and elaboration, and we look forward to having you back and doing that. Debbie, I'm going to... take off here because I've got an afternoon to get to, but appreciate deeply. You know, you did a wonderful introduction of both of us. You, of course, are the founder of Homeopathy World Community, an enormously amazing project, and it's just always a privilege to come back every week with you on the show and to discuss things with vaccines. Greg, I will see you next time around. Very much looking forward to it. Debbie, take care, and I'm going to leave you,
okay,
if I may please, to sign off.
You both have to run, and I'm just going to close the show with some information about what's coming up next. We have on the Homeopathy World Community a number of items. We have on Monday, Dr. Robert Brook is going to be talking on the Health In Show at 11 a.m. about global warming, the global climate change and the health effects. So that is going to be on the Nissan Communications channel, and nissancommunications.com, and you'll see the Health In. We just finished on Monday a talk about cell salts with Miranda Castro and what these gentle little cell salts, tissue salts, can do to help you for just acute situations, and some of them work very deeply in chronic cases. Yesterday we had Dr. Adil finishing up part two about breast tissue, diseases of the breast. We talked the previous week about breast masses and yesterday about abscesses and fibroadenoma. Besides, each week we give tribute to well-known homeopath and answer any questions that people have when they either contact me or contact him regarding any health issue at all. And he will find a way to answer you on the air. And of course, we have the Thursday show at noon and a couple of other items that I just found out. Dr. Dinesh Chauhan is going to be having his online course starting in January. There's a little banner on the front page of Homeopathy World Community concerning that program. We will be having Kate Birch and Cilla Watcott back again about homeoprophylaxis. They have the banner called The Solution. It's a book about using homeopathy when there is epidemic infectious disease, or actually using it prophylactically in place of vaccinations. And on December 17th, Dr. Isaac Golden will be on the Health In show. That's Monday at 11, the Health In show with Dr. Isaac Golden, who has been using homeoprophylaxis for just about 20 years now and has done intense investigative studies around the world about contagious diseases and what has been used and has been effective. Miranda Castro, I mentioned, and Dr. Deepak Sharma of the Orbitz Clinic is with us as my host every week on Monday at the Health In show. There is, for those folks who are in the health field or lay homeopathic practitioners, a program, a computer program called Complete Dynamics in Homeopathy. You'll see the banner on the front page to go and find out a little bit more about that. Basically, I use it as a study source because it has a lot of the Materia Medica, the encyclopedia of the medicinal drugs that are used in homeopathy. It has a way to tally up your symptoms that you take when you take a case, and then you can come to a good conclusion. It's a beautiful, wonderfully designed program that gets updated automatically on your computer without additional cost. If you're into gardening, like Greg Glazer probably is in his organic farm, there is a book by Kaviraj, Homeopathy for Farm and Garden, completely organic planting and healing your soil. We also have Kavitha Kukunor, who has written an inspirational book, and we have lots and lots of articles, thousands of articles on Homeopathy World Community that's open for the public to read. You can join the Facebook Homeopathy World Community website and just get updates there, get involved, be part of the energy of creating waves of awareness. In addition to all of those programs, very often, at least once a week, I will take between 30 to 60 minutes to read the work of Dr. Herbert Roberts, who has written The Art of Cure using homeopathy. And he takes us, as if he's writing to medical physicians, to student homeopaths, and he's basically guiding us step by step from what is homeopathy into how to take a case and why it works, and philosophically looking at our world and our vision of our world. And he is simply a genius in what he has to say, and it will make sense to you. And then if you listen to what he says, and all the programs are archived, you'll get a sense of really the information that you can observe and take in about individuals and what to do with that information. For instance, a regular allopathic medical physician is not going to know really what to do with the information such as the person is restless and needs small sips of water during a fever, during anxiety, and it also has diarrhea. Whatever those types of symptoms are, homeopathically, a physician can see the remedy picture as a matching similimum, the similar of the action of the medicine and the symptoms that are elicited in a person who has a disorder, who has an illness or a disease. We can take in the emotional characteristics, how they respond in certain situations, the fact that they're nervous every time they get into a place where they have to speak in public. What can a regular physician do about that except kind of dumb down the person or numb the person or give them a drug to a relaxant of some kind or an antidepressant, where what they really need is support through that so that they don't constantly need the remedy anymore, but that remedy touches them at that essence and core of who they are so that they realize that they are strong, that they are capable, that they can stand up and speak without fear. And these are the kinds of things that homeopathy has the power to do. So I encourage you to tune in, listen to the shows. We've got hundreds, probably about 500 radio shows archived now. And we encourage and invite you to share these shows with your friends via Twitter, via Facebook. You can even take the embed code for this show and put that little widget onto your website. There's a lot of ways that you can share this information with friends. And I want to thank you so much. I'm going to now put on the concluding music sung by our famous Alan Phillips, awesome lyricist, musician, instrumentalist, composer, and also vaccine rights attorney. And so check out his website, and here he is.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S., a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brook and attorney at law Alan Phillips. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts and questions. Let's go! Thank you for listening to Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S. with co-hosts Alan Phillips and Debbie Brook on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to educate before you vaccinate.
Let your truth be young girl. One.